You're listening to Back to the 80s. That's Bon Jovi, Living on a Prayer. That's something we are all doing right now, living on a prayer. I think we got a phone call. Well, let's see who this is. I don't know. Hang on. They shouldn't be calling on that line. This is Back to the 80s. Who am I speaking to?
You are talking to the one and only Dark Lord. I have been around many centuries. This is me, Count Dracula.
Is this the real Count Dracula?
I am not selling children's cereal. This is not Count Chocula. This is Count Dracula.
Ah, well, Count, do we owe this occasion?
Well, I was sitting in my castle and I was talking to my pit bull, Jackson. Heel Jackson! We will feast tonight. And I understand that you are having some very enchanting guests on the show tonight.
Yes, actually, we do. We have. Well, the Frog Brothers? No, no, we've got some special guests calling in tonight. But none of them.
Don't
the
lie to me. I can see you. I am like Santa Claus of the Black Knight.
Now, Count, what gives you the idea that we had the Frog Brothers going to call?
I was told by a friend inside of the industry that the Frog Brothers would be there tonight, and they would talk about how they slay those delicious, sexy male vampires. The Lost Boys.
That's right.
I tried out for a part in The Lost Boys, but the handsome Billy Will took my spot.
So you're under the impression that The Lost Boys was real?
Yes. Is it not?
Well, I hate to burst your bubble, Count, but The Lost Boys was a movie, which means
that nothing was real.
That
is a lie from your Hollywood mouth. I am sitting with Tom Cruise. He is a vampire and a Scientologist, and he is sitting with me and telling me.
The bottom line is that it was a movie. Tom Cruise is lying to you. But I can't tell you this. We do have a very special couple of guests tonight, but none of them, unfortunately,
Wait
is the Frog Brothers.
Slow your Italian pastrami roll down. What do you mean that the Frog Brothers are not there? What do you mean, my good friend Tom Cruise? He's lying. I'm going to bite the neck of Nicole Kidman.
Well, good luck with that. They haven't been together in years. So, Count, knowing that you had your teeth that you wanted to sink into the Frog Brothers, and knowing that, unfortunately, they're not here, I can give you the next best thing.
I want to kill them.
I can give you the best.
Wolfie, quickly, I need the Captain Morgan.
Well, I don't want us to talk about killing anybody, especially in how society is kind of jumpy today. But I can't tell you this. I want to make it up to you. So how about this? How about you request a song and I'll play anything you want? How's that?
Oh, very nice of you. Your neck looks delicious. I want to hear a song by a good acting friend of mine. He also is delicious. I want to hear the song Rocking Revolution from the delicious Corey Feldman.
Welcome to Back to the 80s Radio, our very first show of 2021. The show that brings the 80s to a whole new generation by talking about those things that make us long to go back to a better time. Joining me today, as he joins me every single Friday, is a man that has put down more hecklers than the amount of times the phrase fake news has been used. A man that in his spare time is looking to lure Bigfoot by dressing up as Bret Michaels. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the Chang.
Oh, and a happy new year to you and all our lovely listeners and followers here at Back to the 80s. My brother, how are you on this finally a Friday Back to the 80s show?
We were all thinking, finally, 2020 is done. We're out of it. You know, wash my hands. I don't ever want to hear about it. I don't want to know about it. I don't want to dream about it. It's done. And what happens 6 days into 2021? We have almost civil war. What the heck is going on?
Seems to be like drinking a little bit too much milk a little bit past 1 a.m. and you wake up and your balls have exploded again.
Wow.
To remind you of the food sickness you suffered for an entire year, that being 2020.
Now that, my friend, is quite a picture that you just painted. And well, having heard that, I can tell you that we've got a great show for you today.
Right.
As we travel back to 1987, which, by the way, Chang, it is and has always been my favorite year in the 80s, next to 1984. And it's not just because in 1987, U2 released their Joshua Tree album and they started that tour.
We have got some top 10 lists that I'm going to bang you with tonight from 1987. I think that we need to go back in time to 1987 and pop the top on a year that was a little bit far-fetched, as I'm going to state. The explosion of rock and roll music. We went from pansy-looking sissy boys to where classic rock kind of left off.
Right.
The hippies left the room and took the trees with them. And the pretty boys came in wearing Aquanet, lipstick, tight clothes.
Yeah.
And looking exactly like your sister or your cousin on a 12 o'clock night.
Now, listen here, though. You may be hating on the way they looked. You may be the hating Chang has arrived. I know. But I got to tell you, bro. These bands that, they wore makeup and they looked like girls. Well, some of them, not all of them.
Not all of them.
They had some great music.
Some of them sucked without looking like girls.
Yeah.
I'll just throw that out there.
Probably. But they had some great music. Come on, you can't deny that.
I can deny it, but we'll get into that later on into the show.
You, my friend, are a hater.
I am the king of hate. Pretty metal of the 80s. There, it's out there. It's out there.
All right.
I don't wear spandex.
Nice. Well, I want all you 80s fans to stand by for some great information, great music by a very famous celebrity from the 80s.
Ooh.
This is the one and only Back to the 80s. Don't go away.
Like a creature of the night.
Back to the 80s.
If you can't wear a spandex jumpsuit, what can you do? This is
Back to the 80s.
This is Back to the 80s. You're with Toscano and Chang on A Rockin' Revolution by Corey Feldman. Now, that's the first single from Corey's forthcoming EP entitled Love Returns, which is the soon-to-be-released sampler album from the long-awaited box set celebrating the 25th anniversary of Corey's first album, Love Left. Great song, and thanks, Corey, for letting Back to the 80s play the song. If you like what you heard, and I know you did, you can order Corey's new EP, Love Returns, including this new single, at qrates.com/projects/22358. Once again, qrates.com/projects/22358. Or get in touch with us here at Back to the 80s Radio through our Facebook page, and we'll go ahead and give you that link so you can go ahead and order Corey's new EP. You know what? Even the word, I haven't said EP in such a long time.
Yeah, EP, it's almost like ED. It's a word that we don't like to use. Yeah, you know what, everybody out there, hit us on our Facebook page if you liked what you heard from Corey, and we'll get you that information. We'll put you in contact how you can get that music handed to you right out of your own device in the privacy of your own home, or restroom, or your vehicle.
Now, if you noticed in the background there for the chorus line, it kind of sounded like a little Brian Johnson thing going on there.
To me, it was very familiar of something of a Brian Johnson, but it did sound like the 80s repertoire of rock and roll.
Yes.
Kind of like in the MTV era, before the MTV. I heard a little bit of my sound was something like Accept, maybe something like a White Lion, kind of that L.A. rock and roll glam vibe to it.
With a little bit raspier voice, though. With a little bit raspier voice, right?
A tougher voice. Somebody that likes to smoke cigarettes and drink beer and kick ass and take names and take somebody's girlfriend. That kind of a toughness in the vocals. The thing that I'm totally tripping out on is he released it now, which the lyrics in his musical content there can pretty much fit the criteria of what we are going through here in the United States to a certain degree, with kind of the fallout of mankind, the mass consumption with ourselves, which has led to our own self-entitlement, narcissistic ways, kind of only seeing us in the mirror reflection as in any of the beauty behind us. And what's odd is this musical set he put together back in the 80s, correct?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I talked briefly via Twitter with Corey Feldman, and he said that this was actually written in the 80s, produced now, but it actually sounds 80-ish. And this is great because this is what our show is all about, man.
Right. A very symbolic that the lyrics that are in this song fit to the life and times that we see nowadays. But yet, I'm pretty sure he's a pretty peaceful cat, and he's kind of like the Chang in you and yourself. We believe in unity. The only way to seek prosperity is that through unity. You can never let hate be your fate. And I think Corey wrote these lyrics back in the 80s because if you look back at the 80s, we did face some very trying times, some very questionable times.
Right.
We had the power struggle of the good against the bad. We had Ronald Reagan going to Berlin and declaring the wall, which is one of the biggest catastrophes in mankind that we could build in separation.
Right.
And that is a wall. And, and Ronnie Reagan went down there and got that wall knocked down.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
But, I mean, he got it done. But
that's
then,
right.
You know, there was a lot of other actions that were going on. We had a lot of invasions going on. We had a lot of hidden scenes where we have, you know, a lot of guerrilla warfare.
As a matter of fact, there were also, I mean, there was a lot of protesting going on. The
Correct.
Economy was in the fritz as well. So, I mean, for
right.
an adult, I mean, for me at least, as a very young teen in the 80s, I didn't
right.
really care about that stuff. So really, I wasn't being affected mentally as much as people
right.
that were older
right.
than me. A lot of the bad stuff that I used to see on TV or that my parents were watching on TV, and I was, what was a lot of stuff with Libya going on and you know, Iran.
And then you had the struggles with homosexuality.
Yeah.
You know, people were coming out of the closet. Then the AIDS epidemic came in and started taking lives and started putting people on that side of the fence to where, you know, your true colors are going to show when the AIDS epidemic is out. If you're favoring the epidemic and lashing out on homosexuals and saying they deserve this, well, then obviously you're not a very good person and you're on the other side of the fence.
Also, remember the drug wars were really, really going on hard.
They were heavy duty back then.
During
you
that
know,
time.
Now that we have all these decades passed and we know a little bit more about the drug war story, you know, where it really transcended from, we know that there is a part to blame on every aspect and everybody involved in the drug war scandal and the drug war cover up and the drug wars themselves. Corey did hit it. These lyrics, if he would have put this song out back in the 80s, I think it would have had a very good, huge impact on society then. I think people could have got behind it. I really believe that there's a lot of people out there that still want to catch that crest of that wave to where we have to think positive. We have to think about each other.
Yeah.
You know, enough of putting ourselves on a pedestal and putting ourselves of importance over our fellow human being.
Yeah, it's a great job. And you know, it's interesting because I've read a lot of posts on our Back to the 80s page on Facebook where people are craving a different kind of revolution, you know, a musical revolution. And a lot of people that I read say, you know, music transcends beliefs. Music transcends thoughts. Music transcends parties, party lines, and differences.
Right.
And it's really true. And so if there was some way that we can contribute and making this world a little bit better place, and in this case, Corey Feldman, by bringing us great music as this, especially with that 80s feel to it, man, I at least we welcome it here on the show anytime. Today we're going to be talking about 1987, and as I mentioned, it was my personal favorite year, although a few things happened that were downright scary in 1987. One of them was the Whittier earthquake in 1987. Where were you when it happened? Because it happened very early in the morning, around, 7:45, 7:50-ish, something like that?
Right.
Where were you?
Now, you're going to trip, and I'm sure our listeners are going to trip. I was in Whittier, California, on the very top of the General Telephone building. And we were there at 7:30 in the morning. We were going to start work. And I was employed by my dad, who was a contractor, a painting contractor back then. And we were going to be putting a waterproofing on the whole exterior of this building. Now, when the earthquake hit, I was right on Whittier Boulevard by the 605 freeway.
Okay, so you were a little bit further south than, for example, where the Whittier Mall was.
I was probably 4 to 5 miles away from where the earthquake first hit. And a lot of people, you know, that came up the San Andreas Fault, which is, everyone knows, which is Turnbull Canyon, the Whittier foothills.
Yeah.
And I recall the earthquake coming at us, and you kind of heard a rumble, kind of like somebody was rolling a steel ball down the asphalt street.
Yeah.
Now, you know how you see waves rise and then they sink and rise and they sink.
Yeah.
This is how Whittier Boulevard came at us when we were on the roof.
Really? So you actually saw like the street rolling towards you, like a wave.
We saw the street rolling up and down. And
that's crazy.
Forget, my dad looked and he said, "Get the f*** off this roof now." And I'll never forget, the five of us ran down the stairs. We got down to Whittier Boulevard. And as we were coming down the stairs in the concrete corridor of this old-fashioned building, you could feel the impact on the walls as it was like a humming, rolling sound. And when we were on the stairs, we were getting shaken back and forth. By the time we hit the street, we looked to our right side, and the earthquake had already passed us, and you could see the rolling continuing. You could see the 605 shudder and shake a little bit.
Wow.
And then it dissipated past that, and then there was calmness. I'll never forget hearing people screaming, crying, the breaking of glass, cars hitting each other, sirens. And now the crazy thing about that is, I remember at that given moment, it took several minutes, but the city was closed down. They were not letting any cars in and out of Whittier Boulevard. Whittier City. If you were in a vehicle, you had to get out of your vehicle and step onto the sidewalk. So there was mayhem. Buses were stopped in the middle of their routes.
Right.
And I recall later on that day, I walked from Whittier, California, to my home in Montebello, California, and it was right up Whittier Boulevard, and I walked all the way home because I could not take my vehicle, my truck, to get home.
Yeah.
And I needed to get back because my daughter, my baby daughter, was there, and she was with my then spouse, her mother, and I just really needed to get back to see what the damage was. I remember when I got back to the house, you know, Teresa was pretty much panicked out of her mind, you know what I mean? She had a lot of my homies around her, the good neighborhood, you know, everybody pulled together. But I remember going inside and seeing my refrigerator on its back.
Oh, it tipped over.
End up on its back.
Holy
cow. On the
floor.
I remember seeing power poles down. I remember seeing like brick buildings, brick walls knocked down, rubble gone.
Yeah,
they were not that storefront that they were. 2 days later, after that earthquake, I went through Uptown Whittier, and it hit me like it kicked me like a thoroughbred kicked me in the nuts. I could not believe
the damage,
that community had the damage. Every other three stores, there was a structure entirely gone.
Yeah.
Cars under rubble, parking lots, you know, two-story parking lots crumbled. People lost their homes. People lost their businesses. Some of the damage that I went out with my dad and my uncle to assess, people's homes were knocked off their foundation.
Yeah, it was crazy.
It was It was almost like a war zone, but it was an earthquake. Something I'll never ever forget, but something that has given me a more appreciation and more consciousness into being a better moral character as I'm alive. Think about everybody else, because at any given time we can lose no matter what we have.
Yeah.
So you have to be able to be strong and be there for somebody else.
You know, it's funny because I think I was a freshman and it's been that long. My friend Mark Hernandez, by the way, a big shout out to Mark Hernandez from Las Vegas listening to the show. And Mark, you'll remember.
Mark, what's up? The Raiders suck, bro.
Mark, you'll remember this story. Mark and I got to school. We lived about four houses down from each other. So we used to walk or ride our bikes to school every day. We get on campus. The first bell, I believe, had already rang at around 7:45 or 7:50, 7:47 or something. It's some weird time. And as I'm walking to my first period class, which was PE, and I used to go to Santa Fe Springs High School. And Chang, right. I know you know where it's at,
exactly,
right off of Telegraph. I'm in the back of the school, walking on the blacktop, going towards my PE class. I'm still on the outside. And then all of a sudden, Mark and I start hearing this rumble, and we see all the windows of the gym start shaking, and then everybody just running out like ants, like crazy ants that just had been poured, you know, some hot aluminum on them, and everybody just starts running. And Mark and I had no idea what was going on, but by that point, when it shook hard enough, we were like, this is an earthquake, what's going on? So we ran towards the middle of the field, and everybody, the entire school ran to the field in the back of the school. Right. You know, Mark and I decided to exit the rear gate of the school and go hang around with other people at some other place. It was our chance to ditch school, but I'll never forget. Yeah, but I'll never forget, because our area for hanging out and riding our bikes and going to the mall was the Whittier area as well. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And we rode our bikes toward the Whittier Mall, and part of the mall was gone.
It was in
rubble, and we were like, you know, it looked like a movie set. So it really threw us a wrench, especially because we had never experienced something like that. And I think that's what caught everybody off guard.
Yeah, it was definitely crazy. And I'll tell you, man, I've gone through some experiences in earthquakes really quick. I recall the 71 earthquake. You know, I was a small kid when that one hit. And that one, you know, took a life of a police officer, some other people up on, I believe, on the 210 freeway, maybe the 10. I recall that earthquake. I recall the earthquake back in, Northridge quake.
Oh, yeah, the 90s,
which is
another
story. I was a city worker at that time, and I got dispatched out there to have to go out there and take aid and blankets. And that was another one of my Changism stories that have enlightened me through these years. But earthquakes, bro, that earthquake to me was something big, that, you know, right up the street from my hometown, right up the street from your hometown. So it kind of scared the crap out of all of us of that area. It doesn't matter how old you were. If you can remember it, and you can remember it to the point to where you can visualize the pandemonium and
you know, we all had a sense of PTSD afterwards.
Yes.
Because for weeks, I could feel the earth moving, and it wasn't even moving anymore. Or I would wake up at night thinking that there was an earthquake. And my house was three houses down from Los Nietos Boulevard and Telegraph, which is the railroad tracks. So whenever the train used to pass in the daytime, that would freak me out as a kid, because I thought, okay,
you
it's another
hear
one.
The train, yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was another.
You were right over there. You were on the other side of Cantaranas.
That's right. On the other side. That's right. We're traveling. If you just joined us here on Back to the 80s, we are traveling through 1987. And our very first event that we all experienced was the Whittier quake of 1987. But on to some happier moments that occurred. The World Wrestling Federation, the WWF, presented to the World WrestleMania III from the Pontiac Silverdome in Pontiac, Michigan. Now, I don't know if Chang, if you were a wrestling fan or you weren't. I remember I was. But the interesting thing for WrestleMania III was it was very notable because they broke record of attendance at the Silverdome. Before that, they had a record of about 90,000. But when WrestleMania 3 broke record, it had brought 93,173 people. That was the largest recorded attendance for a live indoor sporting event in all of North America.
Who was one of your favorite wrestlers?
Back then, I really liked Rowdy Piper, and he was a bad guy.
I wasn't a big fan of wrestling. I was animated by it. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I would watch it every now. I was a big Ultimate Warrior fan.
Yes.
I was a big, of course, Ravishing Rick.
Yeah.
Fan.
How about Macho Man?
Oh, dude.
And let me point to the president. The Macho Man Randy Savage is not happy with your decision, yeah. I am the cream in the World Wrestling Federation.
Wait a minute,
and there is no doubt about it, yeah. You mean Gene Okerlund. You know that I'm the cream of the crop.
Now, do you remember after Rocky fought Mr. T, Mr. T went on for a while to wrestle, but this is before WrestleMania 3, of course. I believe it was for the first WrestleMania, and he wrestled with Hulk Hogan.
Yes, I recall that. The Hulkster, brother.
Yeah. I remember he used to use a phrase.
And what you gonna do when Hulkamania and the largest arms in the world run wild on you?
That's right, brother. That's right. Hulkamania, brother, is coming to your town.
Oh, my gosh. In April 19th of 1987, The Simpsons cartoon, which is the longest-running series in history, because it's still running.
Right.
They made their first appearance as a series of shorts on the Tracy Ullman Show. We've talked about this.
That was a great improv television show. All mad respect for Tracy Ullman, especially because, you know, I did comedy, I did improv comedy, and I just, like, I love that form. She just falls out funny. Hey, you know, seeing that we're talking about TV shows, I'm going to give you the top 10. I'm going to need a drum roll for this really quick. And here is the Chang's top 10 TV shows in the States of 1987, starting off with number 10 from the network of ABC, Anything But Love, going down to number 9 from NBC, Empty Nest, followed up by Murder, She Wrote.
Oh, by the way, I hated Murder, She Wrote. Wasn't that Murder, She Wrote with Agatha Christie?
Angela Lansbury.
Oh, Angela Lansbury, that's right.
She looked like that evil kind of housekeeper that somebody...
I just remember that whenever that show would come on, oh, time to change channels.
Yeah, I wasn't a big fan. And then remember this show at number 6, Who's the Boss?
Yes.
With the future ever so hot.
Alyssa Milano.
Followed up by number 5, everybody's favorite girls, the Golden Girls. That was comedy genius. One-liners up the yin-yang. Adult content that you had to either be a little bit intelligent or a little bit dirty-minded to understand.
Yeah. Too old for me. That was too old for me.
Well, that was a great show. And followed up by, I know, a show you never watched because you were a mere child.
Yes.
And that is 60 Minutes. Greatest cutting-edge news shows of its time. And then my favorite show, which I used to gather with my homeboys and watch constantly, would be number 3, Cheers. And that was NBC also.
Ah.
Followed by number 2, A Different World. Well, the Chang has to say, that show sucked. Good thing it was on NBC. And then everybody's favorite big mouth comedian who got herself in trouble later on, got herself fired off of her own channel, Roseanne. And number one show in 1987 off of NBC, everybody's favorite jello-eating comedian, everybody's favorite dad, and current prisoner in the prison system, The Cosby Show, was number one in 1987.
Yeah, that's the show I did watch once in a while. So, no, you know what? I was into shows that were either into music, like I watched so much MTV, but I also was into, you know, cartoons, G.I. Joe, He-Man, etc. Or I was into TV shows that were action, like The A-Team. Remember The A-Team?
Of course I remember. Shut up, fool. I remember The 80s.
Yeah, so those are the kind of shows that I watched. We're going to take a quick break here on Back to the 80s. When we come back, we've got a little surprise for you, so don't miss it. And come right back to the madness of Toscano and Chang.
Don't go nowhere. We'll go find you.
Come on, let's go.
Hey,
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Now, back to good, wholesome, politically correct entertainment. Oops, wrong station. Now,
back to the 80s with Toscano and Chang.
Welcome back for the Toscano and Chang attack. You are locked and loaded into Back to the 80s. Chang here. Now, Toscano, we're talking about the ever so beautiful, ever so memorable year of 1980s. Talked about some TV shows.
Yep.
Okay, we talked about a little bit of propaganda.
We did.
Caca that occurred back in the 80s. I want to ask you, where were you in 1987 during the World Series? And can you tell me who won the World Series in 87?
Yes, I can tell you that I was, I was going out with my friends and getting into a little bit of mischief there, here and there. But I do remember that the Minnesota Twins won 4-3 during the World Series against the St. Louis Cardinals. For those of you who are hardcore baseball fans such as yourself, Chang.
That's right.
So I would say I was at home, obviously.
I was very angry, but you know, the year after that, I was very elated and ecstatic because my Dodgers took the World Series in 1988.
Of course.
With Oliver Sutter and Kirk Gibson, who could forget that memorable game.
Yep.
I remember watching that World Series, dude, and I was just let down. You know what I mean? Because I was like under the impression of like both these teams suck. I have hated these teams since I was a mere child. And I have to sit here and watch them and drink Budweiser beer. How horrendous.
Now, let me ask you a question. Horrendous. In 1987, was there a player for the St. Louis Cardinals? I believe it was in 87. Wasn't it Ozzie Smith?
Yes, there was. And he used to do some incredible backflips, dude. Ozzie was the man. A true Hall of Famer. I got to give it up to Ozzie.
Wasn't he a shortstop?
Yes, he was.
See, I remember that.
And do you remember Kirby Puckett, who also played, but he played for the Twins back then. Kirby Puckett, a solid hitter.
Yes.
So you know I'm an avid NBA fan.
Oh, I know that more than anybody else.
I will take a knee with my fellow NBA players and my fellow NBA fans. I will take a knee.
Yes, you
now,
will.
Now, you know my greatest, most favorite team of all in basketball is
ever-so
world champion Los Angeles Lakers, present-day champions. And back in 1987, in the words of Chick Hearn, the refrigerator door is closed, the lights are out, the eggs are cooling, the butter's getting hard, and the jello's jiggling. The Los Angeles Lakers took the hated ones, the rivals, the Boston Celtics, out of the equation. And took them out 4-2 to win the championship in 1987.
You know, I definitely saw the NBA Finals, and I was in love with the Lakers, especially in that final, because it was against, you know, our greatest rivals, the Boston Celtics, and the famous Larry Bird rivalry with Magic Johnson and Kareem. So what a great final.
It was the epitome of old school basketball every time the Lakers and the Celtics played. You know, I remember going to watch the Lakers play the Celtics periodically. I remember going to so many games in the Forum, and that's where the Lakers were playing in 87. A magical time in Los Angeles history and for anybody that was of Laker Nation. Well, another tidbit from our sports desk. Tammy gave me this just right now.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Now,
lay it on me.
Do you know who won the French Open in 1987?
For the men?
Both men and women.
Well, let's see. Men, the only one I remember, it was either the nasty boy himself, Mr. John McEnroe.
Oh.
But I'm not sure if that was before his time, or this was after his time.
Yes.
And for women, it was, let's see, either Martina Navratilova, or the Argentinian girl, I forgot her name. Now I'm not sure.
Now the men's victor was, get this, are you ready? Yvonne Lindell.
I remember the name. Yes.
And Steffi Graf took it for the women.
Steffi Graf. Yes, I remember that.
See, back to the 80s. We're going to give you nostalgia from everywhere. We're going to hit you with sports. We're going to hit you with historical events. We're going to hit you with top 10 lists, music, TV, movies. Movies we'll get into later.
1987, there was a very important event for those that are Catholics. And the reason that was such an important event is because Pope John Paul II arrived in L.A. for a two-day papal visit, his first one ever in the city, where he made an arrival day speech to the local leaders in the U.S. entertainment industry. And as a matter of fact, we got a secret recording as the Pope dialed in to the Toscano and Chang show back then. And I don't know, are you interested in hearing it?
You know what? I remember giving him the interview. Sure, I'd love to hear it. I'd like to see if I've changed my viewpoint.
People didn't know that you interviewed the Pope before.
No, anyway. Nobody knew. Who would have thought that a charismatic, carefree, long-haired, leaping gnome like me would be the star of a Hollywood movie and possibly interview the Pope? Who would have known? Who would have guessed? El Pope, el Papa.
This is the conversation that Chang had with the Pope back then in 1987 during his two-day visit to Los Angeles.
Yes, you are listening to Toscano and Chang. Who is on the delicacy line today? This is Chang. Who am I talking to?
Yes, hello, Chang. I am Pope John Paul II, and I want to bless you today.
Thank you. Oh, my. I have to put my serious pants on there, Padre. This is probably one of the more holier guests we've had on the show.
Yes, I know if you are referring to my robe. Yes, it is holy. There is a giant hole in the bottom of the robe, which gives me an easy access to when I have to go, you know, to special places to relieve the Pope, you know?
Yes.
In many countries, they call it the poop. But this is a different story. And, you know, as a matter of fact, when they invited me to come here to this beautiful country you have here.
Thank you.
And, you know, I went to Los Angeles. The first thing I wanted to go see are the Los Angeles Dodgers. But they said to me, the Dodgers are not doing good. So I skipped the program and went to see the Lost Boys.
Oh, now, can I call you El Papa, El Pope?
I would like, sometimes you can call me Papi, but that's a different time, maybe at night.
How about this, Your Excellence? What did you think of Fernando Mania at Dodger Stadium? Were you not taken by the Mexicano?
Fernando Mania was this, now somebody took me to get tortillas or something like that, and yes, they put the Mexican meat in it. Are these the Fernandos you're talking about? Because I had like 12.
No. El Pope, please, you are so funny. I didn't know you were allowed to make jokes in that robe in the Catholic religion.
No, this is not a joke, my son. I take my eating very serious, especially with the giant hole that I have here, you know?
Yes, now El Pope, no, Fernando Mania is an actual pitcher, Fernando Valenzuela, number 34 of the Los Angeles Dodgers.
So this he's a very crazy person because they call him Fernando Mania.
Well, they call him El Toro, the bull, the mad bull, because he throws fire and throws with anger and vengeance.
Was he brown and horny?
Yes, he was brown and horny. He was a Mexican, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
Pack the meat.
I have dealt with many, many brown and horny bulls from my time. I should tell you.
I can imagine.
Secret story for you. I will tell you something is going to rock your pants later on. But that's a different story. Oh, I'm going to repent for that one. Okay.
Now, El Pope, let me ask you, what's it like having your own car with bulletproof glass around it? Is that... Do you use a lot of Windex to clean that? Do bugs splatter on it? Does it really protect you from people throwing water balloons at you or paintballs or...
Let me tell you something.
Rocks, pennies.
Let me tell you something, Chang. May I call you Chang? Okay, Chang.
Yeah, you, You can call me whatever you want, Padre de Excellente.
Okay. So at first I asked for mini truck, you know? I wanted a Toyota mini truck dropped with baby tires and gigantic subwoofers in the back so I can entertain people. But the Vatican...
You like AC/DC, El Padre de Excellente.
I do sometimes, you know, but it shocks me very much. So anyway, I was going to tell you that, you know, I wanted a vehicle different. But unfortunately, they give me this piece of tool vehicle that I never liked. Yes. You know, now that it's 1987 and I'm here to visit you, I told them, please get me in secret. I want 1987 Pontiac Trans Am 6.0. And I am still waiting. Can you believe they make the pop? Anyway, that is a different story. Let me tell you, my son, I am here to talk to you because I just came from talking to the Hollywood entertainment people.
Hollywood? Is that Hollywood.
And I talked to many entertainers, many actors and actresses.
Hollywood.
And I had to forgive many of them because they were very, very bad. And, you know, after leaving the office with no more empty pockets, I can tell you definitely they are forgiven. But that's a long story.
Do you have pockets in your robe, or do you wear some Levi's underneath that?
No, underneath I wear parachute pants like MC Hammer because they have bigger pockets. But anyway, nobody can see that, you know. But and sometimes I unbutton the pants, you know, the parachute pants. I unbutton them and I start break dancing. It's a wonderful feeling. Anyway. Okay, well, do you want to know anything else? Do you want to know what famous person I had to absolve from all their wrongdoings?
Yes, besides all the priests that you have let walk under the limbo pole for touching little boys.
Excuse me, what are you talking about? I don't know, it's 1987. We have not been there yet.
Well, El Pope.
There is a very famous person that I had to absolve from all wrongdoing.
Who could that? Was it Richard Pryor?
No, not Richard Pryor. As a matter of fact, Richard Pryor, I have him to come, you know, next year he's going to come to my house in El Vaticano to give a special audience to the rest of the cardinals. They need to lighten up. They're very serious, you know.
No pun intended. Richard Pryor caught himself on fire when he was smoking crack, the way you said that. Now, Padre, please watch yourself. Some people may take that as a little bit of punt.
But I can tell you that recently I had to absolve all the wrongdoings of Nancy Reagan. That's right, Nancy Reagan.
The bird lady.
Because I can tell you something very important.
She's a liar?
Nancy Reagan, I caught her red-handed sitting on the lap of Mr. T. Ah, Madonna mia, what does that mean? She was sitting on the lap of Mr. T. Only God knows.
Only God knows, and only her dress keeper. Now, Padre, I know you have to get in the...
Yes,
the
I must leave in the Papamobile, yes.
Now, quickly, before you leave and you visit us here in Los Angeles...
Yes.
Where is your favorite place to get Mexican food or Italian food out here?
No, when I
have
come...
Have you gone anywhere?
This is my first time, and they have taken me to a little hole in the wall, they call it. But it's a little place, a little food cart, right on the side of the 710 freeway over there. Yes, you know the place. Okay.
King Taco. So you've gone to King Taco.
Yes,
Papa.
Right next to it's a little place there called King Taco. And that's what they took me. And then tomorrow, this is my second day, they're going to take me to some Italian place in Los Angeles. I don't know where. It's called Raffalo's on the corner over there by, I believe, it's Sunset Boulevard, something like that.
Yes. Another excellent choice.
And then after that, they tell me they're going to take me to the Blue Oyster Bar. I don't know what that is.
Now, El Papa, we want to thank you for
joining
us.
It's El Papa, please. El Papa. Get it right, Chang. Okay?
Okay.
I say your name right, Chang. You call me El Papa.
El Papa.
Good, Chang.
It was very good having you, and we hope that you can redeem more souls and fight the devil, the devil's battle.
Oh, no, my friend, I don't fight the devil. The devil scares me. That's why I have the cardinals. Yeah, I'm just a face, you know, kind of like your presidente.
Can I ask you something? Do you think Ronald Reagan is the devil?
No, oh, no. No, no. The devil lives close by in New York City, because it is 1987. He is a multimillionaire that got $1 million from his father and became a billionaire.
Oh.
But that's a different story. Who knows? He's not going to become nobody in the future. Anyway,
adio. Everybody, that was El Padre de Excelente, the great Pope, right here on Toscano and Chang. And we are going to cut to a song, and this is from everybody's favorite metal band, Metallica, from Southern California, yet they claim Northern California. You're listening to Back to the 80s, Toscano and Chang.
Commercials, bad. Music, good. Now, with zero commercials. Please help support and send your donation today.
We are going back to the 80s.
Back to the 80s, Toscano and Chang here with you. Thanks for joining us. If you joined us for the very first time, this is the show that introduces the 80s to a whole new generation, because there is a whole new generation, Chang.
That's right, bro.
That has no... Yeah, there's a whole new generation that has no idea not only what we went through, but the things that we saw and heard. And so what better way to explain it to them than by bringing some of those memories out and talking to everybody who was an 80s fan.
You're a father. You've incorporated the 80s to your boy, just like I have. You know, my girls are a little bit older. Hell, I'm on grandchildren already, and they think the 80s are insane. Grandpa, you were in the 80s? Wow, what are you still doing alive? Why do you smell like a zigzag? What's up with that? Dire of importance to bring the 80s back to generations that didn't live through it or don't know much about it.
Yeah, I do as much as possible to introduce the 80s to my kids as well, especially with music. And I gave them free range. I said, guys, you can listen to new music. I'm not telling you don't listen to it. But they always tell me the same thing. Dad, we can't listen to the new music because it's just not the same. And it is not the same. As far as movies are concerned, you know, we're all over the place and they love 80s movies. I had them watch the very first time, The Lost Boys, about a week ago. Mm. And they really, really enjoyed
it. Great movie.
Yeah, they really enjoyed it. The soundtrack was great on that as well.
Mm-hmm. It's all rock and roll.
Yep.
The Lost Boys was a great movie to me and probably a lot of guys of my generation and of the rocker lifestyle. I mean, all those dudes were totally sexy ass cats, man. They were eye candy to the 80s women.
Yep.
You know, they all looked hot. They were all young. They had that mystique about them. It was that 80s rock and roll heavy metal vibe. I mean, come on. One of them, the mystique was like a Jim Morrison or like a Billy Idol, you know.
I was examining the other day. I was looking at a lot of the posts that people place on our page. And I came up with something that it's not a revelation about why people prefer the 80s to today. It's not about that. It is just a word that I thought of that rings in my mind every time now that I feel nostalgic. And here it is. One of the biggest things that we miss from the 80s is that feeling of being free. I don't know if that makes sense to you guys listening, but it's not that we were captive. It's not that. But nowadays, it doesn't feel that we're free. Maybe because now with all the cares of being an adult and things like that, we kind of feel constrained because of problems, depression, and everything that goes on to it. And then you add on technology and all the stuff that we have now. There, that freedom that we had back in the 80s, it's gone. It's like your spirit calls out for it. I wish I had that feeling of being absolutely just me and having the fun and just enjoying life to the fullest, which is how we used to do it back then.
You know, the difference, I think, for me, personally, is I think the difference between my mindset nowadays as opposed to the 80s, I'll sum it up in one word, mortality. As I've grown up into the later years of my life and seen some of the things I've seen, the good experience, the bad experiences, all created one thing, wisdom. Back in the 80s, I was not really too worried about my mortality. I didn't think about it much. very carefree mindset, kind of Evel Knievel, Muhammad Ali lifestyle. You're going to go full throttle. You're going to go balls out and caution to the wind.
Which is what I was telling you. It's feeling free. You're right. Free from that thought of something's going to happen or right. It's going to happen to me. It didn't compute. So it's that sense of complete freedom mentally, emotionally, even spiritually in a way.
And you know what? You nailed it right on the head. And that's not taking away or sugarcoating anyone's life that had distress or
right.
trauma in it.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't matter what era you grew up in. Sometimes you grew up with abuse at home.
Yeah.
Alcoholic parents, drug addiction. You know, sometimes you grew up with incest, pedophilia.
Yeah, rape and things like that. Yeah.
A lot of rape. I don't think any of the modern day problems and the woes and the quos of life that could totally clean you out and make you black in your soul didn't happen more so now than they did then. But just the time and the vibe and the innocence is different for anybody in our age bracket, because if you didn't have to go through any of those circumstances, your point is very valid. And that's why I brought up, we're not taking away anybody that maybe had any other issues that had to grow up a little bit tougher in the 80s.
Yeah.
But I'm sure back in the 80s, it was might have been a little bit more easier to digest or things to get away from whatever problems you were going through emotionally or at home.
Yeah.
I mean, you know,
absolutely.
Not all of us lived on a white picket fence. So.
Correct. Correct. This is a new note from 1987, and that was October 11th. The first National Coming Out Day is held in celebration for the second National March on Washington. A very loved character that we have here on Back to the 80s actually had a phone call interview with me back then.
Toscano, yes. My favorite Italian sub sandwich in the whole world.
How are you, Rod?
Toscano, I am fantastic. I just bought another spread, and it's up in Mulholland. You've got to come and see it. Chang will be there tomorrow. I'm going to dye some of his gray in his hair because he doesn't want to look like Santa Claus anymore.
Right. Now, he told me that you're now going to be coloring his beard, his goatee.
No, I'm going to leave that a little bit gray just because, you know, sometimes you want to sit on Santa's lap, humpty, humpty, bumpty, bumpty.
I don't know if you heard the conversation that we had since 1987, but that was your first time calling into the show, and that was
because of
National Coming Out Day.
Thank you, and Happy New Year to you. Are you still with that gorgeous Mrs. Toscano?
Yeah, sure am. Over 23 years, so yes.
Incredible.
I must be doing something
incredible. Well, you're gorgeous. Look at you. You look just like Sylvester Stallone did.
Really?
When he was doing pornos in 1969, Every Man Has His Day. I don't know if you've ever seen that, but it's very good movie.
Okay.
A lot of weightlifting.
Yeah.
I love weightlifting.
Yeah, I bet you do.
Toscano?
Yes.
If I were to strip down, would you bench press me?
On that note, this is Back to the 80s. When we come back, there's more madness with Toscano and Chang.
Ever wish you could go back to the 80s with the crazy clothes and those wacky hairdos? Well, let Toscano and Chang transport you back in time, back to the 80s.
We never stop.
Never stop.
Not even when it hurts.
Didn't hurt. Didn't hurt. Didn't hurt.
Non-stop unforgettable memories from the 80s.
Back to the 80s.
You're listening to Back to the 80s. Toscano and Chang here with you. If you just joined us, we are talking about all kinds of things that used to happen in 1987. Now, lots of great music happened in 1987.
We had great music and crappy music. Let's not forget about the crappy music, bro.
Yeah, we had crappy music as well. 1987, we've got our top 10 list, and we also have a couple of songs. And we have a special guest coming up, and we call him Rick the Hater. Now, Rick the Hater comes on to our show once in a while to talk about or to talk bad about some of the music that even I liked.
And it's funny because I never hear him talk bad about some of the music Chang likes. I wonder why.
Hey, Chang, Chango, can I sit here? Do I get my own headcans? What kind of crappy radio show is this? I don't even get a goddamn Pepsi.
Rick, thanks for joining us here on Back to the 80s. And we're going through 1987. We're talking about the music from 1987. March 3rd, Rick.
I remember it like I hated it today, you son of a monkey. What do you got for me?
Eazy-E scored his very first song with Boys in the Hood. That's when he released
it. I hated that song.
Boys in the Hood. You haven't heard the rest. You can't just start hating.
I hate all the time, every day. 24-7, I'm going to hate.
March 3rd, Eazy-E's first song, Boys in the Hood, was released. Now, March 9th, just 6 days later, my favorite band in the world, that's right, U2, released their album, The Joshua Tree. And not only did they release their Joshua Tree album, but they went on tour in 1987. And I got to see them in concert at the Los Angeles Coliseum.
You know what? I can't hate that. Let me step away from the hate real quick. That was a very inspirational album. I thought that they transcended into the modern day Beatles, kind of made themselves rock and roll kings. Their look was both sexy, hard, and kind of Western, which added to the mystique of
You know, it's funny you said that because you do. Did you go to that concert? Because I remember Bono came out with no shirt and a leather cowboy vest.
Yes, that night.
As a matter of fact,
I remember that show.
They opened up the concert with the song Where the Streets Have No Name. They made the Coliseum shake that night.
Yeah, you know what I hated about that song? Because every street's got a name or a goddamn number.
Doesn't
it? You know what I'm saying?
All right, so let's quickly do a top 10 for 1987 songs.
Sure.
Starting from number...
Top 10 hate song? What do you want?
We'll do it really quick. Number 10, 1987 top songs. Number 10 was Living on a Prayer, Bon Jovi.
Nah, I hate that girl band. Next.
Number 9, Bob Seger with Shakedown.
Good album. You know what? Chang looks a little bit like Bob Seger. Hey, Chang, you got some Bob Seger in you? What's next?
Number 8, Bruce Hornsby and the Range with The Way It Is.
I hate that guy's name alone, Hornsby.
That was a great song.
Little Boy Blue, come blow your horn. Blah, blah, blah. Hate it. Next.
Number 6, Robbie Neville with C'est la Vie.
Oh, man. Man, I don't want some foofy and the noofy Frenchy foo-foo kind of song. I hate it. I hate it.
One of my favorite bands of the 80s for a lighter kind of rock was Starship with Nothing's Gonna Stop Us Now.
Oh, man, I hate you for hate. I hate you for liking that band. My God, I hate that band. You know what I hate more than a band sticking together after an original singer or an original member left that band? I hate that they stick it out and they come back the same name, or they try to come up with some other cotton picking name, the Starship. Oh, man, you ain't Grace Slick. I hate you.
Number 4, Whitney Houston, I Want to Dance with Somebody Who Loves Me.
The only thing I hate about Whitney Houston is I don't get a banger. That's what I hate. Gorgeous woman, what a talent. I hate Bobby Brown. What's next on the goddamn list?
Number 3, Gregory Abbott with Shake You Down.
I hate that song. That's so sissy-ish. I bet you like that with your tight black shirt you're wearing right now with your man chichis bouncing all up and down with your gold chain and a horn. I hate you.
There's nothing you like, is there, Rick?
I love it.
Number two, Heart with the song called Alone.
Love that song. I love that band. I saw that band back in 1977.
Oh, that's good for you. Hey, Rick, guess the number one song. I will tell you the band, and you guess the song, okay?
If it's that crappy Def Leppard band, that guy should have lost his tongue. The drummer shouldn't have lost his arm. That band singer should have lost his tongue. They suck. That guy wearing the little shorts like a little flag.
Number one, the band was made up of nothing but women. And the band was The Bangles.
Oh.
Can you guess the name of the song for the top song of 1987?
It had to be like Walk Like an Egyptian.
Yes, you are right, Rick. Good
job.
What
do I win? Do I get a goddamn Pepsi or something?
First of all, did you like the song or what?
Well, I love that song. I used to be one of them road dogs in that band.
So you and Susanna Hoffs were acquaintances.
She was like a hot dog to me, boy. I'm telling you. Every night I was playing the tambourine.
All right, Rick. Well, that's the top 10 list of the 1987's top 10 list. Rick the Hater, everybody.
Hey, thank you for having me, Chang. I hate you and I hate Toscano. I need to get a goddamn Pepsi. I got your hair over here. You look like Bob Seger. And you smell like a zigzag goddamn packet. I'm out of here. I'll catch you some bitches on the next top 10 list or something. Hey, am I going to get some parking validation? I hate coming to this rotten studio, getting on the damn floor.
All right, this is Back to the 80s. We are still talking about things that happened in 1987. And our last topic, Chang, believe it or not, are movies. Movies of 1987. Is there any movie in 1987 that you remember that you said, man, that was one of the really good ones? For example, this is just an example. La Bamba came out in July of 87.
Oh, yeah. It was a great movie, man.
Yeah, you know, it had one of the most memorable scenes when Richie Valens' brother finds out that his brother just passed away in the airplane crash. That was a pretty touching scene, man.
Richie! I think the whole movie was touching. I think I really loved that movie, you know, just like you. I'm Mexicano, I'm Chicano, the raza, puro sureño, y qué? And Richie Valens was a role model and an icon to all of us Latinos nowadays, and kind of paved the way for some of the Latino acts that came up and blessed the stage. You know, Jose Feliciano, right. We have Los Lonely Boys nowadays, Los Lobos. Some of you may remember the Midnighters, you know, so he kind of paved the way. That was an excellent movie. Now, the funny thing is, Lou Diamond Phillips, you know, he's not even Latino.
No, he's a Native American, right?
Native American. So it was interesting that he got the role. Something really funny. My daughter's uncle, my daughter's mother's brother, his name is Raymond Garcia. Everyone knows him as Raymond Cruz. He tried out for that movie, and I took him to try out for that movie, and I was going over the scenes with him, me and his sister, at our house in Montebello when he was a young starving actor. Now you can see Ray on movies. He was in From Dusk Till Dawn, I think it was part 3. He played the priest in La Llorona. He came out in Breaking Bad as the I think it was a Puerto Ricano or a Cubano drug
dealer.
Yeah,
he's a pretty famous actor, yeah.
Yeah, so that guy is pretty much my daughter's uncle. You know, you could say he's my ex-brother-in-law. One of my favorite movies back in 1987, and I'm sure that you've seen it, anybody out there that enjoys a good comedy, was Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. That movie was killer. John Candy and Steve Martin.
Yes.
You know? I'm fine right here. My hand is right between two fluffy, warm pillows.
Why are you holding my hand? Where's your other hand? Between two pillows. Those aren't pillows.
See that Bears game last week?
Yeah, hell of a game, hell of a game. Bears got a great team this year. They're gonna go all the way.
Some of the content in there was insane, man. You know, you gotta have a dirty mind, bro, to bring in the dirty humor.
Yep. Now, there was a action comedy, I guess you would call it, that came out in 1987. March 6th, they released Lethal Weapon with Mel Gibson. And Danny Glover. Now,
right.
There's a scene in there where it's a scene at night, and supposedly one of the bad guys, I believe, crashes through one of the windows at a shop or something like that. Well, that stuntman who crashed through that shop got killed, actually, doing that scene.
Yes.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, I remember that. Hey, do you remember that movie, The Untouchables?
The one with Kevin Costner as the cop and Robert De Niro as Al Capone.
Yeah, that was a great movie. You know what other movie? Here's a movie I'm going to throw out there. I don't know if you remember this one, or I'm sure some of our listeners remember this one. This one was kind of a sexy movie. You had three of the hottest chicks, and you had Crazy Jack Moonstruck. You remember that movie?
I remember the name of the movie. I remember that Cher was in that movie.
Yeah.
And Nicolas Cage, I believe. Hot. Yeah, and Nicolas Cage, right?
Nicolas Cage was in that. Jack Nicholson played the devil.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, now here's another movie I'm sure you can relate to. And you know Robin Williams, that's my freaking mentor, a guy with my idol.
DMZ, is that me or does that sound like an Elvis Presley movie? Viva Da Nang, oh, Viva Da Nang. Da Nang me, why don't they get a rope and hang me? Hey, is it a little too early for being that loud? Hey, too late. It's 0600, what's the O stand for? Oh my God, it's early. Speaking of early, how about that Cro-Magnon, Marty Drywitz? Thank you, Marty, for silky smooth sound, make me sound like Peggy Lee.
Robin Williams came out like, I'd say like a cat, a wild cat out of the alley. I mean, he was just swinging from the fences in that movie. I mean, he kind of encrypted that nostalgic role of being the DJ, but then being the stand-up comedian that he is. I mean, I was totally moved by that movie. And then later on, I mean, his acting career exploded. And he just was known for such great serious roles as well as being a comedic legend.
Yeah, incredible actor, incredible comic. An incredible person that we should not be missing today. He should be with us today. But also in 1987, another famous comedian who is a genius, and he is with us today, but released the second part to this four-part comedy, I believe, or is it a three-part? Not, I don't really remember, but Beverly Hills Cop 2 was released with Eddie Murphy, Judge Reinhold.
Oh, dude, Eddie Murphy, Judge Reinhold. I mean, that was like an iconic movie. I mean, it was like Eddie Murphy, I mean, could do no wrong back then in the 80s, you know? I mean, everything he did. I mean, and he showed a pretty good side of being a serious actor in that movie also.
Yeah, he was definitely in his prime. It was anything that Eddie Murphy touched became gold.
Right. But then who could forget Lost Boys either, though?
Well, now there's a movie. The Lost Boys. It's an American teen black comedy horror film. It was directed by Joel Schumacher and produced by Harvey Bernard, of course, with a very, very famous cast starring Jason Patrick, Corey Haim, the late Corey Haim, Diane Weist, Barnard Hughes, Edward Herman. The very, very famous Kiefer Sutherland played, of course, the part of the main biker vampire. Alex Winter, who was Bill from Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, also comes out in it.
Right.
And then he's the first vampire to die. My kids were laughing.
I mean, that movie was a trip to me because all those guys looked like cats that I would be hanging around with back in the 80s. You know what I mean?
I wouldn't doubt that.
The flavor that I went with.
This film has a cult following today.
Oh, yeah, of course. Why wouldn't it?
It's a movie, of course, of a family, a single mom with kids that moved to a place called Santa Carla, California, which in reality was Santa Cruz. At least that's where it was filmed, or at least part of it anyway. Kids begin to hang out at the boardwalk, which is, you know, plastered all over the place with flyers of missing people, missing kids, and things like that. The older brother becomes infatuated with a young lady who belongs to the gang of vampires. And
she's hot.
Yeah. And the younger one of the brothers meets a couple of other people, in this case of Corey Feldman. He meets the Frog Brothers, and they give him the rundown on town and how they are really all vampires doing the disappearing of people.
The grandpa helps him out.
Yeah, I guess the grandpa knew everything about it, and he never said anything.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I never expected the older gentleman. Remember, he started going out with the mom. I never expected him to be the main guy. The main vampire, of course.
You know what, though, man? To me, it did, because he represented the typical slime ball. If you ever came from a divorced family and you had to grow up with your mom and she started dating, and you get every Tom, Dick, and Harry that wants to be slick and smooth and throw their moves and try to woo you or bully you and make, you know, present themselves to be bigger than life. That character alone, I was not surprised that he was the lead vampire. I mean, it was in the credit right there, bro. Just knowing his character, you know he was going to be something demonic, bro.
Yeah, yeah. This has been Back to the 80s. And you've joined Toscano and Chang here on what has been the very first show of 2021. And although we started 2021 good, 6 days into it, it kind of starts to stumble a little. I'm hoping by the time next Friday comes around, the second show of this new year, Back to the 80s will be a lot happier. So on behalf of Toscano and Chang, on behalf of myself, Toscano, I wish you nothing but the best for you and your family. I want you to be safe. Do what you're supposed to do. Let's keep those masks on us and keep doing our part to protect others and to protect ourselves during this challenging time. So God bless. And we'll see you next Friday.
This is the old Chang here. Before I release you into another glorious weekend, I urge you all to remember that today is just another day. Tomorrow could be a better day. Even if it's not better in the news, then make it better for yourself in whatever you do. Stay lifted and gifted out there. Remember, everybody, we are somebody. We are one race, the human race. Make somebody smile. And remember, if you ever get down in the dumps, all you have to do is lean on Toscano and Chang right here at Back to the 80s. And let us put a smile on that face. So as I say before I go away, an adios, arrivederci, hasta la vista. And to all my homies in the barrio, órale.